Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling, and I want to welcome you to Clinical Air, episode number 6. This episode takes a look at clinical trial visits of the future, and our Clinical Air series is hosted by Craig Lipset, Head of Clinical Innovation Worldwide R&D at Pfizer, and our guests include Dr. Tomasz Soblinski, Founder and CEO, Transparency Life Sciences, and Komathy Stem, who is the Senior Director, Product Development, Innovation Lead at Genentech. So with that, I would like to welcome Craig. Craig, hello.
Hello, Val. Happy New Year, and welcome, everybody. I can't believe episode 6, 5 in the bank so far. That's pretty exciting. I wasn't sure when we started this experiment how sticky everything would be, but we've had 5 great conversations so far with some really interesting people doing some remarkable things around clinical research. There are so many folks that worry that things are stale, that the space is not moving forward. Can we really innovate? And at least from those first 5 conversations, I think we've answered that question, and I have no doubt with the types of guests that we have for today that that will continue forward. Our last show last month focused on mobile. We talked with Tim Davis from Exco and Abby Steele from UBC, and I think today's show is really going to build on that very nicely, because the two folks that we'll be speaking to are using pieces of mobile and a lot of other interesting tools to enable some great new models for clinical research, making really transforming the role of patients in studies. And those two folks for today's show, Komathy Stem from Genentech Roche and Tomasz Soblinski of Transparency Life Sciences. I'd like to welcome you both to Clinical Air. So, Komathy, I thought maybe we could open the conversation a bit together. You and I have had the chance to cross paths at a few different forum recently, the DIA, at DPharm, and a few other places, and that's been largely around trials to patients and making trials more accessible. But maybe we could back it up one step, and you could talk a bit about the scope of what you do within Genentech. What is it that falls under your responsibility today?
Sure. Thank you, Craig. And very happy to be here on a very intriguing topic for the new year. My remit at Genentech Roche, I'm based in the San Francisco campus, and what I work on is innovating or evolving our clinical trial model to keep up with the pace of science in the corporate strategy of personalized healthcare. So as we, Roche has a corporate strategy that we will go after targeted medicines for untreated disease, and that requires us to find patients that have very specific characteristics, whether it's a gene mutation or a particular behavior or whatever, but that causes us to have a big problem. Finding patients for our clinical trials is becoming more and more like finding a needle in a haystack. So we have to figure out how to evolve our clinical trial model to keep up with the very exciting science that's occurring. So therefore, my goal and my team, we work on trying to figure out how do we broaden access to our clinical trials and make it easier to find those patients in the haystack, as well as make it easier for them to participate no matter where they live or work.
So what role does big data play in that story as you're thinking about the diversity of data that you may want to use to try to identify those targeted patients, those unique subsets, whether it's clinical data, genetic data? How do you envision taking advantage of all that diverse data to achieve that goal of finding those highly targeted individuals?
Well, I think data is the new gold. And there is a gold rush out there. Everybody's trying to figure out where the gold is. How do you mine it? How do you mine this data and use it for and make meaningful use out of it. And so I think that's where we're trying to explore, are there different types of data that we've not traditionally looked at to help us find the patients, as well as is there new sources of data that can help us understand the disease better that we're studying, or even how the intervention of a drug or other types of therapies actually are impacted by the intervention. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of possibilities. I don't know if we've totally figured out how to do it, but we're exploring multiple ways.
Now, when you're looking at something exciting, when you're looking, say, at the potential of using some of the tools we'll talk about today to engage patients in new ways, what's been the model for making that happen right now, Genentech, Roche? Are you sandboxing a lot of things in sort of ring-fenced protected areas? Are you trying to embed things into the existing portfolio of clinical trials that are underway?
I think we're doing probably a hybrid model of that. We certainly recognize that some ideas are so foreign that I would say the organizational antibodies will kill them very quickly unless we have actually sandboxed them and nurtured them a bit to the point where we have strong data to show that, wow, this is an interesting idea and worth experimenting in our regular business. But because we are in the business of patient safety and ensuring we're mitigating any risks and ensuring the molecule is as successful as it can be, we tend to want to really have a proven idea before we introduce it into a trial. So we have some sandboxing, but then we're also really trying to create a culture within the organization that's willing to accept a new idea and try it out and to do it more in a small scale, so a small pilot, a small sub-study, to help understand how to work with that particular new medium, if you will, and learn how to operationalize it into our trials. And so we'll start small, and then we'll slowly go scalable.
So what to you are you most excited about right now as we start off the new year? What is something in the sandbox or that you're starting to introduce into the existing portfolio that that you're particularly excited about today?
Well, I would say that we're starting to see more uptake of the use of mobile tools. And I think if we look at all other aspects of our lives, more and more people are attached to their mobile phone and use it for multiple aspects of their lives. And so it's only fair that we provide that same kind of medium for our patients in our trials to interact and participate in our trials. And historically, teams have been very hesitant to consider this. There's been lots of concerns about security and privacy and, will it actually work? Will we have missing data? And I think teams are starting to say, this is a really nifty way to, and maybe even easier way, to connect with patients. So we're starting to see more teams asking for mobile tools and integrating them into their trials.
Well, Kamathi, we're singing from the same hymn book because I am declaring that 2014 is the year of mobile and clinical research, that this is the year that it really clicks and comes together. And by use of mobile and clinical research, I'm really excited about that range of use cases, whether it's apps and tools to support and enhance how patients participate in research studies, whether that's just reminder tools and information resources or novel tools for capturing new types of data, whether it's self-reported data in ePRO or sensor-based data, but even that holy grail use case in mobile of complementary interventions. What would it look like if mobile or a sensor were a companion diagnostic or were a second complementary intervention that when used together with my pharmacotherapy really drive remarkably different outcomes? And we somehow have to figure out those pathways with regulators and payers. I think that this is going to be the year that a lot of those opportunities and use cases are really coming together. Now, maybe I'm just excited because it's CES week in Las Vegas and everything in my news feed is about crazy wearable tech, but that's at least my prediction for 2014, and Kamathi, I'm sticking with it.
I share your prediction. I think, though, that it's going to be a bit of it's a little overwhelming as to where to go and where to choose and what's important when you're picking these different choices now that you have. So it'll be an interesting year.
So how do you rationalize that universe when you have, known issues and challenges and problem statements in the enterprise at Genentech and how you develop your medicine and this amazing universe of exciting opportunities? How do you make the match? What's your match.com for pairing those up?
Well, I think you have to first start out with a mindset that it doesn't have to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes. You may not get the right match right away, and be ready for that because we're new to this. And so you have to, I think, do a lot more iterative prototyping before you go live into a trial and be ready to spend some time trying out some of the different technologies outside of a trial before you put it into a trial. So I think that's the first step, to start with that mindset. And then the second step would to be, I do think it's very disease specific, and you really need to understand the patients that will be the end users in that specific disease and understand their behaviors, the cultural norms, depending on what country you're going into, and have that ethnography done well in advance so that you can use it to pick the right technologies. And in some cases, that might not be the answer. You might walk away and say, mobile tools aren't going to work in this particular space, and be ready to do that.
That's some great perspective in terms of thinking that through, because I think, all too often it's very easy for folks to get excited about shiny objects. And, people are busy. They have day jobs. They're developing new medicines. They're running clinical trials. And when something pops up in the inbox with an exciting new tech, it's very easy for that to get people excited, but it has to be kept in context. And, we have to start with where our problems are in those use cases that we want to address rather than just gravitate to exciting, shiny things. This is a great opportunity to introduce our next guest and open up the conversation some more. Tomas Zablinski is somebody that I've enjoyed through his various recent career developments, and in particular, the most recent manifestation of his passion to reinvent this space with Transparency Life Sciences. Welcome, Tomas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So, Tomas, speaking of a Happy New Year, we're kicking off 2014. What are your predictions for the coming year? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm certainly excited about the fact that the conversation about reinventing clinical trials is now at different level than it was even a year ago. So in terms of dialogue between many parties, that includes big pharma, some biotech companies, to lesser extent, at least from where I see it, CROs, but clearly regulators, the dialogue is at different level. It's not about what to do any longer. Everybody understands that using technologies from 1980s is not going to bring the change that's needed. So it's now the conversation how to do it. So I think the realizing that this is a very slow-moving industry, I see 2014 as a year of implementation. I think we're done talking, and we will see more and more pilots, such as the one that Comathy mentioned, but also more clinical trials implementing, since we are mobile, devices page, more of those into clinical trials. Now, are we going to see something that eventually we aim to do, which is provide a systemic solution, which means removing all middle men and steps that currently are existing in clinical trials between a patient and a database, and provide a systemic solution, which would be obvious? I think probably that's not going to happen in 2014. We will see more and more point solutions. So people will increase the use of mobile devices in clinical trials. The danger with that I see is that, like with implementation of EDC years ago and others, the bean counters that ultimately are important will say, well, you implemented 5 or 6 mobile solutions into clinical trials, but it didn't move the needle in terms of cost, and patients really didn't benefit that much because they still had to do a lot of legacy things, visits and all that stuff that is currently very bothersome. So I think there is a need for this this inflection point, if you will, where this will become a systemic solution rather than a number of point solution into legacy system, which I don't think will bring needed disruption. And that's what we are aiming at, and I'm excited about it, whether we will be able to do a clinical trial which is digital to the maximum allowed by ethical and legal considerations and none else. I hope, but I'm not sure if we will be able to pull that off. Unlike you and Comathy, who work in large corporations, being small and outside of this mindset, we don't have corporate antibodies to it. But we have other restrictions which are obvious for us for a startup company. So,
some of those restrictions, Tomas, are well outside your control. So, you know, first of all, I completely agree that it's all about implementation at this stage. That, you know, quite honestly, I don't want to dismiss ideation and coming up with great new ideas, but we've got lots of ideas. We've got a backlog of ideas, and what we need is the ability to properly curate, as we were just talking about with Comathy, curate those ideas to pick the right things to move forward and do it and implement. There's a great quote hangs in my office. Some people attribute it to Edison, some to Steve Case, but vision without implementation is hallucination, and we can't just talk about these things. We need to make them happen. Now, you were talking about, you know, trying to do something radical of a systemic solution and remove these barriers between the patient and the database. But I would imagine to really get to that desired end goal, there are a lot of factors outside of your control. I would want, as we were talking about a little earlier, I would want patients to be able to bring with them electronic clinical data from their EMRs, self-reported data, sensor data, genomic data, data that patients today are really just starting to get access to, but hardly mainstream. What other things do you think we need to see happen in the ecosystem for that type of systemic solution to really happen, to remove those barriers between the patient and the database?
Well, I think obviously you listed a number of things that are huge to change this ecosystem of being able to access priors of individual patients or priors, meaning prior data of clinical trials, which we can talk about separately, transparency and disclosure of failed trials between stakeholders. That's sort of, in a sense, a separate conversation, which I'm happy to engage in here. But building on what we said before, implementation, I'm obviously myself very impatient individual, and I think the space is also impatient, which makes a great fit right now. I don't think that barriers to removing a middleman between patient and database are really that great. And we actually pressure tested the system in a sense direct way by putting together a crowdsourced protocol that is already happened in very end of 2012 for repurposed generic drug in multiple sclerosis, and it's all on our website, so anybody can track how we did it. And we submitted IND to the FDA of a protocol that called for 12-month trial of 150 or 180 patients to be determined, which had only two physical visits in the space of 12 months, the first visit and the last visit. All data is being collected remotely without this patient needing to go to a physician for a clinical trial purpose. Obviously, if they need to see their own neurologist for their regular care, which may happen every 3 or every 6 months, depending on how advanced the disease is, everything happens in their home, and data are collected, including vital signs, and including also now that we have a collaboration with point of care, company that actually provides ability for patients to test their blood themselves for a whole variety of different biochemical parameters the same way as it's done for glucose for many years, and transmit that to a database. The barriers aren't there, I think, or let's put it this way. The barriers are very limited, and I think once you get this design outside of legacy system in a way, which was why I opted to do it in a startup company rather than trying to push it into a bigger organization with all the resistance. It's not that big. So clinical trials done digital way, monitoring patients at home, are conceptually ready to go. Now it's a question of finding money, finding the right indication, in which obviously it's limited to certain indications, it's limited to certain patients, and it's limited to certain drugs at certain stages of development. You don't want to do that in phase 1B or phase 2A trial with a new chemical entity with totally unknown a safety profile, or at least not today. I think in the future, once people get comfortable over telemonitoring, it will happen, but not this is not where we would start. So I don't think the barriers are that many, which is, again, going back to my statement, the year of implementation.
So, Tomas, who's in the crowd? When you envision crowdsourcing development of a protocol, who's in the crowd? Who's not in the crowd? Who curates and makes decisions based on the crowd, or is the expectation that it truly is open like a discussion forum and that the crowd could really reach consensus?
Okay, so it's all the above and none of the above. We are not aiming to do anything that does not fit current regulatory and legal or ethical consideration that have to be met once experiment, which clinical trial is experiment on human beings, is being designed. Just to very clearly point out, we are not a DYO science company such as a few outfits on the web where there is a bunch of people who say, okay, let's test XYZ and we'll see if it works, quote-unquote. We are designing clinical trial protocols up to standards that are required by regulators in Europe, U.S., or Japan, which are very firmly set. What's different in our process is that typically, and you know that because you've been, both of you and many listeners, been through this process tens of times, typically the protocol is designed by small group within the organization, and then it's subject to scrutiny and feedback of advisory board of 5 or 10 people tops, and then it goes into execution. Now, our process is this about venting it through advisory board is still there and will be there because you have to have credibility of experts who will sign on the protocol, and we do not claim to be experts in all therapeutic areas that we'll be venturing into. But what happens prior to this is completely different than what current process entails, which is open to everybody. There is no restriction who can contribute to this protocol: patients, physicians, statisticians, regulators, competitors, whoever wants to go through our protocol builder, which is our tool to design this experiment with us. We had varied success. I think right now we've gone through 5 or 6. And numerically, the biggest success we have with a prostate cancer protocol, which we are doing in collaboration with one of the major medical schools in the U.S., where we had protocol co-designed by over 60, I would call them key opinion leaders in prostate cancer, and about the same number of patients. So that's by far the biggest number we had. The quality of this inputs is incredible. You have people who spend clearly a lot of time, and mind you, it's all for free, and giving us feedback. In other areas, for a variety of reasons that we are analyzing, and we have some good hints why it's the case, it's much less involved crowd who curates it. The curator, we have the paradigm of two curators. One is an expert in therapeutic area. The other one is a patient who is somebody who knows clinical trial process and perhaps participated in clinical trials in the past.
So, Tomasi, as you hear that story, power to the patient, how do you align that to the realities of your organization? How do you start to dissect that type of approach and see how it fits within your drug development process at Genentech Roche, or do you just have to start from scratch somehow and run things in a parallel, protected, siloed universe?
Well, I think you need to do a little bit of both. I think the importance of the voice of the patient in clinical trials is growing. I think patient centricity is becoming more of a common step. But you need to make it easy for teams to be able to obtain that insight from patients. So we're trying to develop methodologies and processes, and I know that sounds boring and this and that, but you've got to make it easy and simple for teams. And so to get that insight is things like Transparency Life Science and their crowdsourcing platform really makes it much easier to get that insight. But I do think as we move to this, go directly to the patient, we can't forget, you know, that all the technology is great, but we can't forget that trust is so important. And unfortunately, as an industry, we're not necessarily the most trusted partner in the household for a patient when they get sick. So we do need to partner with advocacy groups, with community doctors, healthcare providers that the patient trusts to get the true insight from them.
So the reality may be a mix of this kind of open patient engagement, but also looking to organize patient groups and form almost, I don't want to call them brokers, but trusted third parties that can really engage their patient stakeholders and then help us when there may be trust issues that that stand in the way.
Yeah, I think ultimately we both have a common goal. We want to find a cure. And sometimes that common goal is misunderstood. And so I think that's where this third party who can maybe see beyond that can help. And I do believe that, there's a certain type of patient that's maybe more engaged, more motivated, that's online, that's participating in some of these crowdsourcing events. But there's so many patients that just don't even know how to participate in something like that, but probably have really valuable input and insight, and we have to figure out how to get to them as well.
So one thing that Tomas just spoke to is this theme of let me try to reduce some of the dependency on visiting investigator sites, in this case, cutting it down to two, and in doing that, make it more convenient, more accessible, get some more continuous data from patients in creative ways. Are you starting to see that movement within your organization? What's sort of the evolution of that looking like within your line?
It's very slow. I think to understand what might be the opportunity there, I think we're moving out of an era where we've tried to simplify our protocol designs, reduce the amount of data that we collect, because every data point was expensive. Now we're getting into an era where data is fairly inexpensive and cheap. You can get a lot of data. In fact, you have so much data that you can get from some of these new tools that you're not quite sure what to do with it. And so there's a resistance to use some of these things because we're not really sure how to manage the data. So I think we need to figure out how to manage the data and present it in a way that's useful for the scientists to make decisions in our clinical trial process. And I think that's where, until we figure that out and make it easy for them, there's going to continue to be resistance to try some of these new things and continue down the old traditional pathway.
And so do you...
I think, concern about the quality of the data. We're used to the investigator or the study coordinator overseeing the collection. And when no one's overseeing and it's coming in passively, it throws in a little bit of doubt. So how can we, make them more comfortable with this new source of data?
If I may,
Tomas, you were going to say?
I wanted to add one dimension to it, which obviously doesn't help if the process is slow, because it's actually even more, I would say, outside of the current grid. Most people, or many people, look at moving into digitization of clinical trials as means of reducing cost and increasing patients' convenience. I think this is a low-hanging fruit, and I realize that it sounds ironic if I tell you that digitizing certain clinical trials and collecting data from patients' home can reduce budget of a clinical trial by 80% and call it low-hanging fruit. Most people in the industry will say, well, that's pretty hefty. It's not low-hanging. The reason why I say this, because what really makes a big difference is not quantitative savings that you can make and will be made. It's the qualitative change that you can introduce to the process. And you guys hinted on that for a moment. It's ability to craft new endpoints. It's ability to measure things or objectivize things that were not within our reach 5 and let alone 10 years ago. And that is the reason why I think you have to get out of trying to improve current system, but build a new system around technology. I mean, science will always be driving what you do, but it has to be driving it in parallel with technology. So it requires bilingual skills of people who are absolutely top-notch technology experts and at the same time people who have scientific ability to design clinical trials. Because this doesn't exist in current organizations as they were built about around different line functions in pharma or CROs. I think that's another appeal of a crowdsourced approach here. Believe me, you can do different trials that we never imagined with all those tools. And just closing to your, going back to your initial point about your strategic goal at Genentech of personalizing medicine, personalizing clinical trials, this will be essential if you want to do trials catering to infinitely smaller populations that we have right now and proving that that a drug works in 20 patients with certain genetic mutation. It will have to be not only inexpensive, but it will also have to be customized. The endpoints will have to be customized. So it's a truly different way of looking at it.
Tomas, getting a new endpoint, that's a tall order, right? I mean, there are pathways for validating a new endpoint, but they're not cheap. They're not easy, but do you feel these types of tools like crowdsourcing or other tools that you're mentioning, will that help as well in this world of endpoint validation?
Well, I think term validation is one of those that I really think is detrimental to progress, because we're in 21st century and validation. If you want to use new technologies and you apply legacy validation system, we should all go back to 20th century. So the way we validate will have to change as well. And I think I'm very encouraged by the fact that there are enough people of that mindset within regulatory agency. I think they rarely use the validation language, much less frequent than actually big pharma is using it or CROs are using it. We have to find a way to validate those endpoints within days, weeks, or perhaps months, but not years, using priors, using big data, using modeling and simulation in silico, all those technologies that existed and were expensive and underdeveloped. And that will, I think, happen because it's just the way the world is moving.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Any resolutions that anyone is willing to share for the new year, since we're still in that window of making grand resolutions that are so hard to keep? Tomas, is there anything as you're looking at this year that you're excited about trying to do differently and make happen?
Well, I think I'm not particularly big on resolutions or anniversaries, so I'll just say that my strategic goal for the company that I started and now continue to build and increase the scope of what we do is to accelerate and implement what we do. And that's a very modest statement and doesn't give you any metrics.
And for you, Komati, as you're looking at this new year, is there anything that you're thinking that you want to commit to doing differently in this year to make those goals happen?
Yeah, we actually, I think I started out with the call with this way. My team resolved to take some risks this year that I suspect will result in mistakes. So we resolved to make some mistakes because if we don't take the risks and we're in making some mistakes, we're just doing things the way we always used to do them. So we have a team that's willing to hopefully pilot a trial that is more virtual and uses all these new emerging technologies. So that's our goal this year.
That's fantastic. And, you know, in the interest of being fair, I'm gonna share a resolution as well. Mine is focused on sticking to communication plans that, within my space, I think we've done some really exciting things. We need to continue to get better at telling that story and socializing it and sharing it, not just through great forum like BeeFarm and this show, but even just bringing it home within our own organization. They're so big and so complex, but I think in the past we've treated, or I've treated, communications almost as a night job, as a side job, and I feel like for this year, I've got to bring it into the core, and we've got to really make sure that we're telling that story. Change management is so critical for the success of everything we're trying to do. Well, Val, I think that takes us to the end of this flight together. I'd like to thank Komati, Tomas, all of our listeners. I'm really excited about a great 2014, and I thank you for joining us today.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you.